We'll now have Stephen come up to introduce our speaker for the evening.
Hi, everyone. Hello, y'all tonight. My name is Stephen. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I met our speaker tonight after this meeting at Fellowship, and we were the only two in the room, and I'd never met her before, and we started talking, and I burst into tears, and she became my sponsor that night. And I love her very dearly. She was with me when my husband was dying all night long. All night long. There was a couple of people in this room that were with me that night. And she has been a great grounding comfort. And she never tries to fix me. And without further ado, she's not going to try and fix you either, Kathleen.
Thank you. That was incredibly beautiful. Yeah, the only person I was trying to fix was me all day, because I was trying to like squeeze in a little more recovery before I got here tonight. Welcome to Al-Anon. I'm Kathleen, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Actually, I'm Kathleen with a K, as I was nicknamed by the guys at this meeting. So, Kathleen with a K. And thank you so much, Stephen, for asking me to speak here. I'm very honored to be at this meeting, because this is where I took my first cake in Al-Anon at 1 year, and I come here every year for that, and I come to this meeting each month, and I'm so grateful that this meeting opens it up to women and has speakers. And I've listened to all the speakers on this, and there were times where I would listen to them when I was having a very difficult time, and I'd put that speaker on and fall asleep to them. So if anybody's listening to me now in bed, it's going to get better. Thought of that. I have no idea what I'm going to say tonight, by the way, as you can tell. I want to give a shout out to John H., who I met him when I was in Al-Anon for a year, and he spoke at another meeting, and I so related to what he said. And we were talking afterwards, and I said it had been a year, and he said, "You should take a cake." We didn't say should, he wouldn't should me, but he's like, "You can take a cake at that big meeting." And I was like, "Oh, I don't think so." And he's like, no. And I said, "Oh, but I really haven't done anything," because at that point I didn't have a sponsor and hadn't worked the steps. And he said, "Do it for the newcomer." And I was like, okay. And then I came here and I took a cake, and my program changed. My program changed when I actually acknowledged that I had been showing up to these rooms consistently for a year and trying to be open to things getting better. And that totally qualifies me for Al-Anon, that I didn't think I deserved to take a cake because I hadn't put enough work in. So, welcome to Al-Anon. That is my story, is as if I have to earn, you know, the love and acceptance. And there's so many people I know in this room, and there are so many people I don't know, but I just feel your spirit right now, because I was nervous. This room means a lot to me. It's played an important part in my recovery, and you know, these are the speakers that we come to hear. And I just want to say, and I loved it when Mike said, "I don't feel like I have to do much of anything for you tonight." Because, you know, growing up as an Al-Anon girl, I felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders most of the time, and I had to deliver a lot. And these rooms have embraced me and taught me, like, Kathleen, you're just fine how you are. Work at your own pace. We don't expect anything of you. You don't have to earn your seat in these rooms. So it's wonderful to be up here and feel this. I also wanted to say, I love this meeting. It's so funny. I met this guy at another meeting one time, and he said, "You look really familiar to me." And I said, without thinking, "Do you ever go to the men's meeting?" And he just looked at me like, what is she talking about? And I just, that's how much I feel a part of this meeting, even though I'm a woman. Like, I wanna thank you guys for, I was telling my brother, I said, this meeting's always been important to me too, because, you know, some of the people that I had difficulty connecting with in my life through the disease were men. And so it was very healing for me to come to these rooms and be around men in recovery. It's meant a great deal to me, so thank you very much. Like I said, I have no idea what I'm gonna say, but what it was like, I come from a family there's alcoholism in my family. There's 8 children in my family. My grandparents, my mother's parents, were both alcoholic. My maternal grandfather was institutionalized for alcoholism. He was put into a psych ward because back then that's what they used to do because they didn't know what else to do. And my mother was actually a nurse at that hospital and she worked in the psych ward. So one day she turns the corner to go in and check a new patient and it's her father. So, you know, and I never knew my grandfather because he died. He actually died in a barroom fight and he missed out on us and we missed out on him. And it breaks my heart because, you know, a lot of things have changed since then, but he didn't have the rooms. He didn't have the rooms and I think he probably just tried to fight it on his own and, you know, he lost. And I know that was very painful for my mother. So she was raised by 2 alcoholics. You know, her mother, my mom would do her homework in a bar a lot of the time. She'd walk her mother home. So even though my mother never drank, she was a child of alcoholics and she's an Al-Anon and it deeply affected her. And that affected me a lot. And my father's drinking bothered me. I don't know about his side of the family, but I know that his drinking bothered me. There was a lot of drinking. He would have friends over to play cards. There would be a massive amount of alcohol, people fighting, and a lot of times it would get physical between the guys. And there was just a feeling of, I don't think things are under control in there. And being aware of that as a child and kind of having my backup, even though my mother was an incredible mom and I trusted her completely, there were many times where I was aware as a child, like, I don't feel 100% like the adults have this covered. So of course, you know, as a child, I'm like, okay, well, I can do it. You know, I didn't consciously have the thought, but I thought, okay, well, I can do this. That seemed to be a role that I took on in the family without anyone ever asking me to do it. I mean, people give me chores and assignments, but that seemed to be my thing. I seemed to have an awareness that something was wrong and it was scary. And so I thought, okay, I'll do it. And one other thing that I wanted to share, it just popped into my head again. My father smoked a lot. And my mom was always trying to get him to stop smoking. And someone must have said something to me because every time my father put his cigarettes down, I would throw them in the toilet. So needless to say, my father went through a lot of cigarettes. He got very frustrated and upset. And when he would say, "Why do you do that?" I would say, "I don't want you to die, Daddy. I don't want you to die." And my father quit smoking, okay? Probably had nothing to do with me, but in my mind, I thought, I made that happen. I helped my father stop smoking. I have some kind of power when I put it to the use for good. And that was a very young age, and I like internalized things like that, and that began my journey of thinking like I could just walk around with a superhero cape and help save the world and save people that I love. My brother is here tonight. He drove down to listen to me, and he's in another program, and it's amazing to just stand up here and see my brother's face. You know, we've had talks and he's very open about it, and I'm asking in front of like 200 people, can I say it? I should have asked you first. You know, he's sober and he went through his own personal hell to get sober. And he's talked about there were times where he thought, you know, he wasn't gonna make it. And there were times where I wondered about that too. And now I showed up to speak and he was parking and we walked in together. And I thought, you know what I mean? Like, he's in a program, I'm in a program, and he's sitting next to me supporting me as I speak to you. And I used to be spinning crazy and trying to control everything, and he was in pain and fighting his own demons. And now he's sitting there giving me this love right now. And we walked in together. So that is a testament to me of anything can happen in these rooms if I show up and try not to control things and stay out of the way. This is a miracle for both of us that I never knew would happen or how great it would be. So I grew up like that, and some of you have heard me share before, so you know, my whole story isn't gonna completely change, so some of it will be the same, but you know, growing up, I felt like I was in a video game. like where they train soldiers, and like those things pop up and you have about 2 seconds to decide if that's an enemy or a friend and should you shoot them or not. That's kind of how I felt as a child, that I needed to assess the situation and very quickly determine who was safe and who wasn't, and if they weren't safe, how was I going to deal with it? And that, you know, of course I realize now as a child I had no business having to think about that kind of stuff, but that's the family disease of alcoholism. You know, when I was very young, things were really lovely in my family. The home was beautiful. We had chores. We had family nights. There was a lot of beauty and grace. And as the disease progressed, the house became more chaotic, less attention to the children, you know, all the things that go on as the disease progresses. So I sort of took on some of those roles, you know. I would forever try to clean the house. Everyone would go to bed, and I would stay up at night cleaning the house. And I didn't realize at the time I was trying to make order out of the chaos and fix everything in my family. I just thought I was cleaning the house, but that's what I was trying to do. And of course it didn't work, because everyone would wake up and see it. And if they acknowledged it, people didn't always, but even if they did, it would go back to the way it was, because, you know, there's so much love in my family, and my brother and I have talked about this. There is so much love in my family. That is not the problem. The problem is the family disease of alcoholism. Love is not enough. Love is wonderful, and it will help tremendously, and it has helped tremendously with me in this program, but it is not enough without a 12-step program. For me, it was not enough, and for my family, it was not enough. So all these ways that I would try to fix things never worked, because, you know, I'm trying by myself. It's like there's a giant flooding river coming at me and I have a little paddle and I'm trying to keep us safe. I mean, it's absurd. So that was, you know, part of what it was like when I was growing up. I just became ultra responsible. I thought about everybody else. I would anticipate your needs, what you wanted, what you liked, what you needed. I would think to myself, if we could just deal with everybody that's in crisis right now and help, you know, the pots that are boiling over, if we could just calm that down, then I can get to me, then I can think about myself, then I can get to the things I love and how to make my life better. All I gotta do is get everything okay for everybody else, and then we'll get to me. And as you know, in these rooms, like, that never happens because it's a progressive disease. So we're never gonna get to everybody else, and everybody might not be okay. And if you're new, I don't mean to sound like doom saying that. What I'm saying is Al-Anon has taught me how to be okay, even if everybody's not okay. And I would like to say welcome to the newcomer right here. Welcome. This is for you. I'm talking for you tonight, because I came in here scared, not knowing what to do, used to being the one that solved all the problems, but I couldn't solve the problems I was having and the powerlessness I felt. But I wasn't used to trusting anyone else or turning anything over to anyone else. So I was lost. I was absolutely lost. And that's kind of I'll just jump back and forth in time, I'm sure, tonight. It's kind of an interesting story how I ended up here. So what happened with me is I was terrified of alcoholics. Terrified. When it came time for me to date, I was terrified that I was going to end up with an alcoholic guy. So scared, because I thought, I don't know how to have boundaries with them. They don't respect my boundaries. I can't control it. So I was terrified of them. So I avoided them as much as possible. And I didn't date very many alcoholic guys. I just dated like Al-Anon guys who were crazy. Which is really the same thing. There's just no drinking involved. But so, like, I remember, oh, this is, you know, when you're up here, you're like, you don't know what you're going to say. I remember, oh my God, it's embarrassing. When I was in college, I dated a guy. He was a wonderful guy. And I remember he told me at one point that his father had chased him with a butcher knife, right? And I thought, oh my God, that's so sweet that he trusts me to tell me that. That's amazing. Oh my God. It made me feel closer to him. There were no red flags. Like, people in his house are chasing each other with knives. Do not go out with him, even though he's really great. there was like, a, you know what I mean? And as an Al-Anon, I have a very high threshold for crisis and chaos. And I was the girl, man. If I was on the Titanic, we would have all gotten out. We would have all been alive. We would, because I would not stop until we were. So that's how I was. So it didn't scare me when people would say things like that. I mean, you know, if somebody tried to chase me with a knife, that's different. But, you know, if someone confided in me, and I also think the fact that some people's pain and their families were seemed crazier than mine was comforting, because I was like, well, they're not going to think, he's not going to be like, I can't get involved with this girl. There's too much going on there. It's like, oh no, he's crazier than me, or his family's crazier than me, so that's good. I'm like accepted. Somehow I feel better and look better because they're crazier. Anyway, I don't know if you can relate to that, but so I had such a high threshold. I love it, you guys are nodding your heads. Thank you so much. I had such a high threshold for crises, drama. I'm the calm girl, I'm the one that can help you feel better about it all, we can solve it and all that. And that is a, those are beautiful skills to have now, as long as I'm doing them consciously and it's because I want to be and it's for good or it's for work or whatever, but it's not like, oh, I have to rescue you and save you. And there was a lot of that rescuing and saving growing up, and then even, you know, high school, college. It was very hard for me to witness someone in pain and to not try to help them. Very, very hard. And I remember one day somebody was like, can't you just like say a prayer to people and just be like, bless them and move on? And I was like, it's really hard, because I empathized with people so much, probably because I had my own pain. And we do, you know, Al-Anons, we're very sensitive people. We are sensitive, kind, good people. And I'm proud of that. And I just had to get in here and kind of get some backbone about that so that I wasn't taken advantage of and I wasn't a doormat, and it was for fun and for free. And I wanted to say that, you know, one of the things that Al-Anon has given me is the difference between servitude and service. Because I felt like I was in servitude much of my life. Like, I joke to people, but not, I feel like I've been working since I was 2 years old. And I was tired. I was tired all the time. And the truth is, I was working since I was 2 years old. Because at 2 years old, I realized stuff was going on in my family, and I started punching that clock and being like the guard on the wall for my family. Up, you know, through my life, really, until I got to these rooms. And it was the first time that I remember exhaling deeply when I walked in here. And I didn't have to do anything, and nobody needed me to save them, you know? And I was in a room full of other people that related to that feeling. So, and the program practices that we not try to fix each other, you know? And that has been such an incredible thing to me to, if I ask someone in Al-Anon for something, or I ask my sponsor, you know, she's gonna tell me like her experience, strength, and hope. She's not gonna say, Kathleen, you need to do this. And the thing is, much of my life, I didn't know who I was completely. I didn't know what I wanted, because I had made myself into a pretzel for you. I had made myself a side dish to go with you as the entree. So I didn't know who I was completely. And so it was very easy for people to say, you have to do this or you should do that. And I would bend and change and adjust myself. And so in these rooms, like, I can get experience, strength, and hope without someone like my sponsor telling me what to do, but helping me find my own way to the answer that's right for me, between her, between being in the rooms, between step work and communicating with my higher power, I can unearth more of who I am. And I love that somewhere in 12-step literature, it refers to, excuse me, becoming the people we were meant to be. And that is like such a mantra for me. To become the person I was meant to be, because sometimes I would think, and not in a petty way, but just, who would I have been? What might I have been like if the family disease of alcoholism didn't hit us, and I, you know, altered all this behavior. And the program has helped me to recover that. And I love that it's called recovery, because recovery is getting back. It's me unearthing who I was, who's in there, who got buried, who got neglected. And I'm recovering that through the help of the program. And it's quite amazing. And one example of that is my sponsor was saying to me, we were talking about, you know, fun and being tired and all this, and she's like, you know, I was asking her opinion, and she said, you need more fun. You need more fun in your life. And I was kind of like, but, like, how do you consciously do that? You know what I mean? Like, okay. I mean, I like to have fun, but I was like, and she said, take your non-dominant hand and write a list of things you love to do when you were a child, or things that you never got to do, or things that you like now that you've never done. And when I was done, she said, that's your fun list. Now put it into your calendar. So I then had scheduled fun things, which seemed so bizarre, but you know, I schedule everything else. And that's the thing, being in Al-Anon, I tend to be at the bottom of the list, like work and other things, other people are more the priority. So it's not that I think, oh, I'm not worth it. It's that I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll get to that. I'll get to that later tonight. I'll get to that. So then I roll up at home at 10 o'clock at night. I'm tired and my stuff doesn't get done for me. So I actually had to put things in my calendar. And now when I start to feel overwhelmed, which does happen sometimes when there's a lot going on, I'll tell my sponsor, and then I also take out a big desk calendar because I need to see the whole month, because I can trick myself in my phone. Oh, I'm just busy today. Oh, that's just, I'm just busy tomorrow. But if you give me 30 days that I'm looking at, and I'm like, you're busy every day for 30 days, that's insane. And I'll look at what the things are, and how much of it is fun, how much of it is service, how much of it is program, how much of it is work, you know? And I will start to eliminate the things that can go so that I can have some peace and serenity back, because I start to feel like I can't breathe. I start to feel overwhelmed and like I can't breathe. And so I start to take those things out and immediately I feel better. Immediately I start to feel like I can breathe, which shows me it's an inside job. That feeling of anxiety and stress and panic is inside of me. It's not, like, nothing really changed except I crossed some stuff off the paper, but it's me, like, getting it out and having some support to lighten my load. And, you know, as an Al-Anon, as a hardworking Al-Anon girl, I have a really high threshold. I can handle a lot. It takes a lot for me to feel overwhelmed. So when I feel overwhelmed, I know like national disaster is about to happen, you know, because I can handle a tremendous amount, but that doesn't mean I should. You know, the little kid inside me has been working since 2 years old, trying to save everybody in all kinds of situations, horrible situations. And just because I can do that doesn't mean I should ever do that again. So this program has helped me tremendously with that. So I'll jump back into, so how I got here is, you know, I was in a relationship with someone and it had started out really good, and then all of a sudden he became unkind and it was very detached and it was really painful, and it was very painful for me. If I was already connected with you and we were having a relationship, it was very hard for me to remove myself if I already loved you, even if I didn't appreciate behavior I was witnessing. I mean, it wasn't horrific behavior, but it was like not giving me what I needed and not being kind. And so my brother knew about this, and that wasn't the only thing. I was trying to spin all the plates and things were falling apart. And you know, at work, I would feel all this pressure to be perfect. And if you critiqued me or criticized me, I would fight you to the death to prove you wrong. Like if you told me I did something and I didn't do it, oh boy, you better watch out, because I had to be perfect. I took tremendous pride in being perfect. And if you were telling me I wasn't, when I was younger and I wasn't perfect, I got nailed for it. It wasn't safe. So it wasn't even just ego. It was a defense protection thing. If you critiqued me and criticized me, I would fight you on it. And it made things a little difficult for me sometimes at work, as you can imagine. If a boss is like, hey, you know, I didn't yell at him, but if they were like, hey, you know, I was like, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do that, you know, get into that. you know, like, and I didn't realize that can be part of this family disease of alcoholism for the Al-Anons, is like, if I didn't do it, you better not blame me for it, and I will talk to you until you know that I didn't do it. So, anyway, so I'm in this relationship and having a very difficult time, and things are just coming unraveled in my life in general, and I'm not happy. And my brother, who is already in a program, says, well, why don't you check out Al-Anon? And I was like, you know what, dude? I'm good. I'm totally fine. You just keep not drinking. And everything's good. Everything's gonna be fine if you just don't drink. So thank you so much for your concern, but I don't have a problem. I didn't say it like that to him, of course, but that's what I was thinking. And, you know, he brought it up a couple of times because, you know, he wanted to, I think, share the beauty of recovery that he was experiencing. And he loved me. And I also thought, and I always have to admit this, I thought Al-Anon was for women who were married to guys that drank and they were pissed off at them. And that they sat in their rooms and just complained and got mad about even, and I'm not saying you, that is your thing, and I'm not saying you don't have a right to if that's what's going on, but I thought that's what it was. And I thought, well, I'm not married to an alcoholic, I don't live with an alcoholic, I lived alone. And I thought, and one day I realized, oh, I live with alcoholics. In my head, I live with plenty of alcoholism in my head, because it helped form who I am. And just because I didn't live with anybody currently didn't mean Al-Anon wasn't for me. And it's also funny about the thing of living alone. I said to my sponsor once, I said, you know, I don't think that it's an accident that I live alone. And she said, you don't need boundaries if you have walls, Kathleen. And I was like, true. I mean, that doesn't mean everybody's living alone is doing that. That's what I was doing. I had reached a point, at first I needed time and I needed to protect myself and I needed not to be around people because I needed people not to cross my boundaries, and I didn't know how to set them. Because in my life, if I would set a boundary, like an example, I remember someone in my family once saying, wanting me to give them a ride somewhere, and I couldn't and I didn't want to, and they were in the throes of their disease. And I said no, and they picked up an ironing board and threw it across the room and hit the wall. Do you know what I mean? So to me, that's like, that's what happens when you say no. That's what happens when you have a boundary. Nobody goes, way to go, Kathleen, you're taking care of yourself. That's amazing. I'll find another ride. It's like, smash, you know? And it was like, okay. And I'm not, and I also gotta say, I'm not making fun of my family, because you know what? I'm a part of this family disease of alcoholism, and I am not here because, I'm not here, and it's not like it's the fault of the alcoholics in my family. It is a family disease. This thing is multi-generational, and I feel it every day. And I love the alcoholics in my family. And I had no idea the hell they went through. I thought it was a choice. I thought they were selfish and they just wouldn't stop drinking, and I was tired of cleaning up after them. But I thought it was a choice. I had no idea what they went through, you know? And I got to have the part of it that's a little more noble in my mind, of helping and fixing things and cleaning up, and people go, oh, you're such a good girl. You're so nice. You're so, you know. So that's my thing, but I was compulsively helping and fixing and doing. While the alcoholics were in their own pain and despair in the home. But anyway, so I had difficulty setting boundaries, you know? And there were 8 kids in that family. There was so much going on in our house. It was like whack-a-mole trying to deal with, like, whatever, boundaries issues. Lots of love, but craziness too. So anyway, my brother was like, you know, why don't you check out Al-Anon? And I said, no, thank you. And then one day he calls me and he says, hey, I have a buddy. He's flying into LAX, he's got to turn his car in, and then he's got to get to Burbank. I think he could give him a ride. I said, sure, I'm free, that's fine. So I picked up his friend, Maui Bob, which I love saying that. I love saying his name, who's a double winner and a great guy. And Maui Bob, I give him a ride, and Maui Bob is double winner, so he's also an Al-Anon. So he says, I really want to thank you for giving me a ride. I'd like to take you to breakfast. And I said, sure, okay. So we stop at this restaurant and we have breakfast and we're talking and he says, your brother's told me a little bit about you. That's cool. Yeah, okay, cool, whatever. Totally, no sensors went off in me whatsoever, which is crazy and not very unusual. And anyway, so he says, yeah. And he reaches in his bag and he pulls out The Courage to Change. And he hands me that book. Hands me The Courage to Change. And I am pissed. I am really pissed because I pride myself on feeling that I am pretty together. And I don't need this guy that I don't even know handing me this book. Like, he's got the answers, you know? And I was not happy about it. But you know, this was all going on inside. I didn't say it, of course. And anyway, he gives me the book. And so it was an intervention, basically. It was a breakfast intervention for me as an Al-Anon. So then, I drop him at the airport. I don't even remember if I called my brother or not, but I was like mad. How dare somebody think I need this program and that book? You don't even know me. How do you think you know what I need? I don't, you please. So anyway, I took that book home and I put it like on the coffee table and I refused to look at it. I refused to look at it out of my stubborn pride for, I don't know, maybe a week. And then finally one day I was like, I don't know why, but I opened it and I was like, wow, I totally relate to this page, you know? And then I read the next page and the next page and I related to every single page that I read in that book. And it softened my heart and I thought, maybe I should go to Al-Anon. And so I walked into a meeting and I was nervous, I was scared. I was also willing because, you know, when I was going through stuff in that relationship, I hit a bottom emotionally, spiritually, pain-wise that I had never known. There was such a God-sized hole in me, and I just didn't understand what my life was about and what my purpose was on this planet. I just didn't even know. And when I went into that meeting, of course, I came into the meeting and I was like, okay, what do you need me to do? What am I supposed to do? Like, tell me what to do. Should I read something? Should I do something? Should I do? And they were like, just sit down. And I was like, I know. But then, okay, so then what do I do next? And they were like, just, Kathleen, it's cool. Just sit and be. And I was like, what are they talking about? You know? And it was amazing because I hadn't experienced that in my life. You know, I was the one who was always supposed to take care of everything and fix everybody, and now you're telling me I don't need to do anything? It was wild for me, but it was so healing, and I remember feeling like I could exhale, and I remember feeling like I didn't have to help anybody in the room. And I don't know if I had ever felt that way in my life before. Because I'm a person that if I'm in a room and somebody choked, I would go and do the Heimlich on them. I've done it. I would do that. Not that that's a bad thing. We should all do the Heimlich if someone's joking. But I'm just saying, it doesn't have to be my job all the time to be on high alert, you know. We had a dear brother who passed away, and I do attribute his death to this disease. He was not alcoholic, but people who are not alcoholic die from the family disease of alcoholism all the time. And my brother went through a lot of horrible trauma in his life, and he self-medicated, and it is my opinion that affected his brain chemistry, and he ended up with a mental illness that was hell for him, and it caused him to take his own life. And, you know, I used to sleep with my light on at night because he would call me when he was feeling scared. And I wanted to not sleep too deeply so that I could answer the phone if he called because I was so worried about him. And that's, to me, that was what being an Al-Anon was in my family, was trying, being so, like my brother says, you know, things were so above my pay grade, so above my pay grade. You know, I'm actually trying to help save people's lives. And you know, I did a lot to try to help him and was able to do many things, but you know, when he died, I had had him committed for observation because I felt that he was suicidal, and he was. And they let him out on a day pass and he went and killed himself. So I'm not saying that, I'm just saying, you know, we can try to, with every fiber of our being, to save these people that we love. And something can still happen. If that's the way it's going to go, that's the way it's going to go. And I am a champion at going in front of judges and doctors and lawyers and you name it, handling it. And still, it was not enough to save him, you know? And I'm grateful for this program. I didn't realize when I started doing step work with my sponsor, that came up for me and I laid that down. And I didn't even realize that I had any guilt about that because I'd worked through a lot of that, but nothing like step work to lay this load off my shoulders of my brother dying. And so it's, you know, I was sleeping with my light on to try to, so it's a beautiful thing, but it's misguided because I've heard someone say, and I love this, I can do God's work, but I cannot do God's job. And I was trying to do God's job for everybody that I loved and save them. And it's too much. As much of a force as I'd like to think I am, it's too much. So, it's what is that doing to me to not sleep at night? Because I'm worried and I want to have my light on. Bless you. So I came into these rooms and I started doing my step work. And it was eye-opening and it lifted so much. I was afraid to start my step work. I didn't know what was gonna happen or if I was gonna be blamed or whatever. Sometimes I think as Al-Anons, well, I can only speak for myself. At first I didn't think I was part of the problem. So, you know, I certainly didn't want to write about that. But then when I realized, like when I did my fourth step and I was like, hang on, I'm the only one in every one of these scenarios. I am the only person that is the common denominator in every single one of these scenarios. So I must have some role in this, you know, not to beat myself up, but to learn from it, you know? And then like when it came to character defects, I remember my sponsor saying, which I thought this was really cool, she's like, you know, it may not be like that God removes all of your character defects immediately and you just feel transformed, but it's that you learn what they are so you can identify, like in those situations in your past when everything went wrong, what was the character defect of yours that contributed to it? And then if you can see it, you can spot it coming. And then maybe you don't go down that path and end up in that same scenario. So I was like, oh, that was extremely comforting to me. Instead of feeling like, okay, God's just gonna take away everything that's you know, messed up about me and I should just feel completely whole for the rest of my life. That didn't seem realistic to me, but the idea of being able to have insight into what I can lay down and what I can spot so that it doesn't, I don't keep repeating it. You know, and what my side of the street is. And I want to share a little story about that whole thing. So our mom, there's sadness in this. I feel like, you know, our mom passed away 2 years ago and not from alcoholism either, but definitely I feel related to the disease of alcoholism. It was very hard for her to take care of herself because she was an Al-Anon girl. And it was very painful to watch. But she ended up with a disease that took her mind from her, really, and shut her body down. But I wanna say two things about that. One is I got one of my most incredible life lessons from her. I was talking to my mother when she was in the throes of this disease where it would make her forget all kinds of things. And I remember saying to her, Mama, I don't understand how you could go through the hell that you went through in your childhood and all that you experienced, but you can still be this loving, beautiful, unconditional human being. And she sort of popped out of that illness for a second and looked at me and said, I was closer to God than I was to my family. And then she just went back into it. And I was like, oh my God, what did my mother just say to me? Like that was, and I remember thinking, yeah, I could be okay with anything if I'm closer to God than I am to that thing, my family, anything. That was one of the most beautiful lessons in my life. And by the way, if you're new, it doesn't have to be God. It's just a power greater than yourself, and you don't even have to know who that is right now. That's later. But just keep coming back. The other great lesson in my life was my big brother. I remember one day, he was having a birthday party for me at his house, and I left the living room and I went into this bedroom and I sat down and I was really feeling sad. And what had happened is there were a bunch of people that were supposed to come to the party that didn't show up. And I was very hurt and upset. So I'm sitting in that room and my big brother comes in the room. He goes, "What are you doing in here?" And I said, "Well, you know, there's a bunch of people. They were supposed to come and they didn't. I saw them today and they told me they were coming." And he goes, "Sweetheart, there's a bunch of people in the living room that did show up." And he goes, "You gotta go where the love is. It's in the living room, you know?" And that was another of the powerful lessons of my life, those two lessons, because I think as an Al-Anon, I can fixate on, why doesn't that person like me? Why didn't that one want to hire me? What, da, 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 da. Let me figure it out. Let me spin on it like a little hamster wheel in my brain, you know? And that's me. That's my part of the disease. Like, oh, if I could just talk about it and fix it and obsess about it, and da, 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 da. That doesn't work. That absolutely has never worked for me. So my brother saying that, it's like sometimes I just remember when I'm starting to focus on something or someone that's not giving me what I want, it's like, Kathleen, go where the love is. What are you wasting your time? Go where the love is. There's love here. Just find it. And so I have to tell you that through this program, I found a lot of love in my life now, a lot of love in my life. And I see things more. I'm still not, you know, totally recovered about it, but I see things that that maybe hurt or that would have really upset me in the past, and I can now see and have compassion for that person. I experienced something the other day where somebody was really manipulative with me, and it was somebody young, and it really bothered me. I did not appreciate it, but then I went, you know what? I remember what it was like to feel that the only way I could get what I needed was to manipulate. You know, because if I'm not allowed to want what I want or tell you what I want or to have boundaries, how else am I supposed to get it? So I became manipulative, you know? And now when I see people do some of these things, I can have compassion for them. I mean, I don't let them manipulate me, you know? I don't need to be a doormat. But I go, wow, I remember when I felt that way, and I know what that felt like to feel that I had to manipulate. So I can have compassion and move on. And it's like a 30-second thing instead of a 3-day resentment fest. So things like that. So more of what it's like now, it's just so much better. I was always really afraid to get in a relationship. You know, I would be in them, but I was really afraid to get in a relationship again because I thought, I can't get out of them if they're bad. It's too hard. If I care, you know, and mistake pity for love, I'm gonna have a hard time leaving. And with Al-Anon, I knew, I could feel that something had changed in me and that I could trust myself more and trust my judgment more. But I also knew I have a sponsor, I have friends and fellows in program. And I also, through every step of the dating process, I'm now in a relationship with someone. Through every step of the dating process with him, I talk to God constantly, constantly. What do you, you know, should I answer this person? Should I do this? Should I do what, you know, higher power? What would help me with my thoughts, my words, my actions? And it's been an extraordinary experience, but the most beautiful thing about it, it's a very lovely relationship for me, but the most beautiful thing about it is that feeling that I now have that if for some reason it wasn't, I could leave. I could have the strength to leave. I hope that, you know, I don't ever have to find that out, but if I do, I could have the strength to leave because now I'm a priority in my life. And that's the thing, like Al-Anon tells us that we can be okay whether the alcoholic is drinking or not. And that is true. And people have heard me say this, and I hope it doesn't sound wrong. We can be okay whether they're alive or not. We can be okay in the most horrific of situations because Al-Anon helps me have a perspective about my life. And that was one of the greatest gifts of it, is it was very, very hard for me when someone was dying or someone was, you know, crashing and being airlifted somewhere, possibly going to jail, horrific things. And the thing is Al-Anon has helped me go, yes, that thing is happening and that's very scary, and you can show up in the way that you feel is healthy for you to show up, and you can talk about it with your sponsor and other people, but you also need to eat dinner and you need to go for a walk and you need to do an outreach call, you know? So that's the thing, is Al-Anon has taught me it is not selfish, self-centered, or wrong for me to take care of myself, even when staring in the face of hell of people that I love going through horrible things. I can show up and be loving, but I still need to take care of myself, and I'm a priority, and it's okay. And that was like mind-blowing to me, because I thought it was incredibly selfish and I would just run off and take care of whoever and think about myself later, and it would harm me financially, emotionally, spiritually, all kinds of things. But Al-Anon's helped me too to have this perspective, like I still show up for people I love. I still want to be present. I still want to be of service. But I know the difference now when it's clean and when it's not. When I'm just showing up and giving and it's not taking from me, and I'm not, there's no strings in it, there's no manipulation, there's nothing. It's just clean and I'm just showing up and giving and I'm not resentful. And people aren't resentful either. You know, how dare I think that I know what's best for everybody? I can't, look, I wanted to kill Maui Bob for giving me a book. You know what I mean? I don't like anybody telling me what's right for me. I mean, I'm way softer about that now, but I didn't like that. And so how do I have the nerve to think I can tell people what's right for them? And I don't like to work with people who tell me and micromanage how to do every little thing, because you know what? It kills my creativity and it kills my spirit and it makes me not feel like I can blossom in front of them. And I don't ever want to do that in front of anybody again if I can possibly help it. One of the sayings I love in Al-Anon is, when I do something for someone else that they can do for themselves, I take away their dignity. And it's true, and that's what I was doing. And I thought I was helping. My things were well-intentioned. They were so well-intentioned. I thought I was bringing people together in my family. I was helping people love each other more. I was like little Mary Poppins spreading sunshine, but I was a manipulative Mary Poppins, and I was pissing people off, you know? My brother had nicknamed me the cruise director. Because I was in charge of, you know, I was like, okay, we gotta do this, we gotta do that, we gotta, you know. So, I don't know. I don't even know if what I've said has made sense. It's all over the place, but I'm very grateful to be in this program. It has given me a life beyond anything that I could possibly have expected. And I'm so lucky to be here, and I'm so lucky that he cared enough about me to tell me that, and to, you know, have his friend talk to me. And I don't know, I just wanted to say that I've learned to trust my higher power too. I did a want ad. Someone had shared with me, it's a great thing to do a want ad, to list the qualities that I wanted in a higher power, because the higher power I had was very judgmental and sort of authoritative and, you know, a little on the mean side from childhood. And they were like, you need a new higher power. Like, no wonder you don't want to turn anything over. Why would you want to turn something over to that person? You know? So I did that. I wrote a want ad for the kind of higher power that I wanted. And I turned things over, and I talk to my higher power all the time now. And I've come to realize that my higher power wants better for me than I could ever want for myself. I was afraid to turn things over because I thought I was just going to be worked to death and be wrong for everything and be apologizing for the next 40 years without any relief. And I just realized my higher power wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, laughing, blowing bubbles, having a good time, doing whatever it is. And you guys have helped me find all that. You've helped me laugh again and open my heart again and have boundaries and feel safe and feel strong and just be surrounded by love and peace. I was telling people tonight how nervous I was, and everyone was saying the sweetest things. I think I thought maybe if I told everyone one by one that you guys would all be really nice to me or something. But it was great. And Dirk was like, you know, we're a pretty harmless group. So thank you. Anyway, I know I need to wrap up, but I just hope that I have expressed even a fraction of the good that has come in my life from these rooms and from this program. And I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to Al-Anon for making me a priority.